I should point out that I'm sitting in tonight because Mr. Rondecker is out ill.
Oh, he is?
Yes. And so...
Sure is, or is
he? He called. He's in the hospital. He didn't... I don't think it's, like, grave serious, okay. But he's having some issues.
So, I was just elected in December, so this is sort of under fire here. So, I'm not... I don't know everyone by name, and as we go along, because this is being taped in the minutes, obviously, you see them recorded, transcribed... someone from Amex or whatever will call out who you are. So
yeah.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Okay.
So we got a motion, a second.
Yes.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. And we'll move on to the technical progress report.
All right. Thank you. This will be a pretty brief technical progress report. Jason's not here tonight. One of the big reasons is because of this, as we talked about, I think, at the last meeting, the HUD $4.25 million sustainability grant that involves the Housing and Urban Development and DOT and EPA. They're actually in the process, since Northeast Ohio received the grant, they're in the process now of creating kind of the organization that's going to oversee the grant, including, you know, who's going to sit on this board to kind of manage it, and then also they have to hire a program manager and stuff. So actually Jason was out of town having to do interviews for people for job, for one of the jobs. He apologized that he can't make it here tonight. But that grant is moving forward. The forum, you know, this is between NOAACA, Eastgate, SCATS, and AMAX, the four MPOs, as well as all the, I believe it's 10 counties of Northeast Ohio. And that seems to be moving forward. You know, that's kind of the first year of the three-year grant, and I think they're really starting to try to explore what this grant is even going to be, because they basically have $4 million and now they need to know how to spend it. So that's what they're working on. If you remember, too, from last time, we had we talked about our two AMATS planning grants, the $50,000 grants to communities. Richfield was the winner of one of the grants and was awarded one, and then Akron and Metro RTA were awarded the other $50,000 grant. Those grants are underway, and we'll be hiring consultants to help us develop those plans, and they'll have about 12 months to complete them. So it's kind of one element from our Connecting Communities initiative that we're trying to, you know, keep moving by putting some money forward to help communities develop these plans. We're seeing a little bit of turnover in our ODOT, in our District 4, which covers our area. A lot of turnover in central office. If no one's familiar, Jerry Ray is the new ODOT director. He replaces Julian Molitoris. And he was director back in the 90s for a period of time. At District 4, the new deputy director, where it was Eric Setley, is now Tony Uranker, and he's from District 12, which is up in Cleveland. He has 17 years DOT experience, so he'll be replacing him. But it's still kind of that feeling out process, I think, of us knowing what to expect from the administration, from the state, and, you know, we might have more feelings on that as it moves forward. The final thing that we looked into, is I know there had been some discussion about potentially moving this meeting to different locations. And the first one that we attempted to follow up on was possibly moving the meeting to Fairlawn for March. We don't have it a hard and fast finalized that we've got it in Fairlawn, but I think it's kind of, we're playing phone tag right now, but the odds are that that's where it will be, at the either the council chambers or
the community center.
The community center. So I would just say when we send out the next agenda, just take, we'll try to, you know, bold it, make it more noticeable, but we're going to see if, you know, try to have a meeting there, and then we're also going to continue to look at other locations, and I think we might try to do every other one, you know, one here and then one at a different location, as long as we can get the venues and the dates and things. So other than that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
What is, you say it's a HUD grant.
Yeah.
There's no current government organization.
Well, usually the word organization is probably like too strong of a word. Like, they basically, when they applied for the grant, they said we're going to need to hire the consortium or the people that signed the memorandum of understanding as an org. So the four MPOs, the 10 county governments, and there's 23 entities, so I apologize for not knowing all of them off the top of my head. But they, when they put in the grant, they knew that they would need, you know, like a, what they called like a project administrator or manager, and then two full-time employees to do, I don't want to say like the grunt work, but almost do like the day-to-day, you know, because everybody else is an elected official, has other jobs. So those three positions are the ones, and most importantly, the one that's the project manager is the one that they were looking to hire someone for.
And this project manager then will decide where the money goes?
The project manager, he'll more be the administrator. What they're going to do is they're going to create, there's going to be a larger board of of one member from each of the 23 entities. And they're like the deciding board. But then there's also going to be an executive board of like eight that's going to help this project manager run it. So I'm just the messenger here.
So basically, we are using people already hired, and we've given them additional duties now to help operate or run this program. Granted, we have to hire somebody new.
Right.
Because other people have other duties.
Right. Right.
I just didn't know if we're suddenly making a brand new.
Yeah, no. I mean, we're not creating like a new AMATS or a new MPO or
right.
It's not that. It's more like.
You're looking at an administrative cost of maybe $400,000 or $500,000.
Yeah. Over the 3 or 4 years that it'll be administered. So you know, and I think quite honestly, you know, from what I've heard is that you know there has been even debate of like, is this person more like the figurehead leader? That's going to be, you know, almost like would they want somebody like a George Voinovich in that position, like a big guy, or would they want somebody that's more, or is this position more like a, almost like a pure administrator where they have no role at all? I mean, they have a role, but they're not really in the decision-making process at all.
Somebody will do the work.
Yeah, exactly.
Sorry.
There's a program next week at Cleveland State, week from today, 4:30, that Jason's going to be on the panel about regionalism, and I'm assuming that he's probably going to touch on this as well, or mm-hmm. the panelists will touch on it as one example of that. So I'm going to try to make that, and we might talk about that.
Yeah, and I think, too, you know, Jason, if you're interested in getting, like, a lot more information, he has been very heavily involved in the process, and so he really has his, I guess, his finger on the pulse of where this is going right at the moment. So I think you will probably talk about that stuff.
So, anything else on the grants? And the, okay, then let's move on to the Selected Policy Committee.
One of the staff presentation.
Oh, both times, sorry. That's going to be Krista's, right?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you. I'm Krista Beniston. We've had a lot of discussion, and Alex has kind of spearheaded it, about how to involve transportation in the business community more, just to get more involved. Also, sort of outreach for AMATS and just to, you know, get our name out there and how to, you know, get more public opinion. So, 2 weeks ago, Jason and I went to the Hudson Economic Development Group and gave a presentation about, you know, transportation and business. We are looking for, you know, ways that we can get their input more, talk to, you know, in general about how, you know, the importance of how transportation can help them. How do we, you know, look at projects in our region that help promote economic development? So that's sort of like where this started, and I'm going to go through the presentation that we gave them, you know, based on, you know, how transportation investments can promote economic development. In general, and this was for a group that wasn't familiar with our organization, so we did what is AMATS, planning and development trends, how you balance things, and then kind of a hotspot analysis off of connecting communities and what we're doing to be proactive about it. You know, so we over general, what is AMATS, our organization? And then as you guys are well aware, you know, the basic development trends of how auto dependency, you know, affects where people live, work, play, but especially how that affects businesses, you know, how you get products to places, how you get employees to businesses, how you get customers to businesses, and then what types of projects, you know, in our area can work with those. You know, the low-density development, as we're changing the structure of where people go, how that affects businesses. Government and businesses both have to adapt with less and less services. How can we focus our money where it will help most? And then sort of where is the line between government encouraging business and then, you know, directly subsidizing the private enterprise? You know, kind of where should the regulation be? What kind of investments do we want? You know, do we put all our money to, you know, keep the Goodyear plant here? Or, you know, what kind of areas off the interstate do we want? So sort of the balancing act, how do you do, you know, as a regional planning agency, we're in charge of sort of the public good. How do we make sure our roads are efficient? For business to thrive in our area, you know, there has to be easy access to and from that, get people to places, versus how do we not, you know, just put, help one specific business. Most, you know, if you say like businesses, developers would have no regulation, you know, come in, do whatever they want, but we've seen, you know, how that leads to an area like Montrose. So how do you balance that? You know, what role does land use regulation play? Because, you know, how our current system is, we have zoning and we have a lot of regulations to control, or that businesses kind of have to jump through the hoops to get approved. But as, you know, I think a lot of us would agree, that hasn't been the most effective in a lot of cases. You know, it hasn't given us what we would like anyway. And one kind of just example we did is looking at two different communities, Streetsboro and Hudson, just to kind of see the different types of regulation that regulation land use and also that transportation investments have played, and how just the different development patterns. So here we have Streetsboro in 1970, and you can see there's the suburban, or there's the development in the northeast corner, but it's relatively undeveloped. They had few land use controls, not a historic town center in general. And then in 2005, it's very developed. They had, you know, this huge boom of businesses, commercial. A lot of the Northwest Corridor is bigger, light industrial. And just, I think most people would agree, it's always one of our highest crash locations. The more money that's been put into the area as far as transportation investments hasn't alleviated the problem. A lot of businesses came here because it has great highway access and it's a good location, but at what point does, you know, all of the people coming make it harder and would actually hinder businesses? And plus the city then has to put in a lot of money. So a contrast is Hudson, which, you know, it has its kind of historic town center, same, has some development, but there's still a lot of rural areas, and they have a higher level of regulation. And then Hudson in 2005, they've fought to keep the main thoroughfares, you know, still just one or two lanes, not to expand it. A lot of the more industrial businesses have located on the outskirts of town. And I think most people would say that, you know, downtown Hudson is a very desirable place to be. It's a good place to have a business. People want to come there.
Yeah, and I think one of the things, too, that just kind of shows is there's almost like two approaches. One way we think about that 14 corridor in Streetsboro, and there's, you know, I think, between 40 and 50,000 cars on there a day. And it's been widened to, you know, 7 to 9 lanes to try to help alleviate, to help the economy. And what we've gotten because of that now is that in some ways, you know, people will avoid that area between 5 and 6 and not want to go to the retail or that, you know, anything like that, because the traffic from the commuting traffic is so horrible. And then kind of interesting, and I don't even think we're trying to draw any, you know, hard and fast conclusions, but then, you know, you contrast it with Hudson, where they, you know, they still have traffic issues. There's no question that they don't have congestion, but what they've done at the same time is they've kept this concept of community and identity, and also we've still seen businesses thrive. They're just not, it's not set up the same way. And I think, you know, one of the things that Sled kind of brought to mind, like, you know, where is that line between, you know, you help business, you want to see everything on 14 be successful, but you can't, you know, you can't keep widening the road until it's, you know, 15 lanes wide. It's not going to work. And eventually that property, you know, from being desirable, once you have a certain amount of critical mass, it starts to become undesirable. And, you know, what can you do in planning to keep it desirable, even though, you know, you might be getting a higher critical mass? So I think that's, you know, not saying like one's better than the other, but that was one thing that we thought was a really interesting contrast from two communities that are right next to each other.
And you know, the overall congestion in Hudson isn't much worse than it was 20 years ago.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's the surprising part.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, and even, you know, some of the roads, I mean, you know, your average daily traffic is very similar to what it was 25 yep. years ago, even though the growth is, you know, has changed. And
so, I mean, one thing we're trying to do is, you know, from a regional planning agency, what's one way we can be more proactive to encourage businesses or to look at these areas that, you know, could either, you know, encourage business and economic development in the region or could become kind of problem spots. And so we've decided, or we've sort of gone along with like a hotspot analysis is one thing we're starting. This stems partly from our Connecting Communities initiative, which you're familiar with, looking at land use and transportation. And essentially, you know, kind of we did a sample with the Walmart Montrose area relocation where, you know, the Walmart's moving 2,000 or so feet. And, you know, just how we can play a better role, get in, you know, talk to the people early on, be a lot more proactive in looking at these areas. So we've started looking at areas, you know, where you have major, you know, like intersections or major interstates where you have multiple jurisdictions, areas that are, you know, prone to high growth. The Brimfield exit near off of 76 is a good example. So, and more just, you know, how you get these players to the table, be more proactive early on. And so that's just the Walmart example is, you know, one kind of we came in at the back end, but, you know, find these areas that would potentially we could make more of a difference early on in looking at transportation improvements.
Yeah, I mean, from our, one of our initial analysis, what we found is there are kind of these, you know, 5, 6, 7 locations in the two counties that, you know, I mean, we're not Nostradamus, but, like, you know, that look like they have the same elements where, like, in the Brimfield area, the border of, where the border of Talmadge ends, where Brimfield starts, you know, the lows moved in, but, like, there's a lot more, it seems like that, you know, we're starting to see a lot of higher growth there. So, you know, we were trying to look at some examples where we thought, you know, this could be potential. Another one, you know, is the Seasons, like Seasons Road, Route 8, Seasons Road all the way up to Macedonia, where in the past we've heard of, you know, 1,000-square-foot mall or a 1,000,000-square-foot malls, soccer stadiums, you know, all that sort of these ideas that, you know, really, and then you're talking about Macedonia, Boston, the village of Boston Heights, Hudson, even Cuyahoga Falls, Stowe. You're talking about a lot of communities and how is this all going to play together. So, you know, and I think that's where we kind of think, you know, looking at the Walmart example kind of gives us a little bit of a foundation to look at some of these other locations.
So that was pretty much the gist of what we talked about. And then we had, I think, a really good conversation on, you know, what types of projects AMATS is involved in that area, where we're going, how, you know, businesses can get more involved in the transportation planning process. I think one of the issues is, you know, they'll have public well-being, you know, ODOT, for example, when they have all their public meetings to get input. We'll have them in the middle of the afternoon and then want business support. So, you know, how you can reach out to the business community more and they can have input into these transportation decisions that, you know, could either hinder or really help their business. And so I think, you know, we got a lot of good feedback and a lot more people, you know, learned what a resource we have and what kind of information. So, Alex, if you have anything.
I mean, the presentation was a good presentation by both you and Jason. I want to echo the applicant as well received. They were impressed by the Connecting Communities booklet, what we've seen here before with the maps, weren't aware of that resource, thought that there were things they could use, wanted to know how much of it was online. One of the things, they brought up a number of different issues, and we also had our city engineer there as well. So they were asking specific things to Hudson. But one of the things some of the businesses brought up was the idea that we mentioned once before and kind of forgotten, I think, is the federal designation for Route 8. And even though it's not really an AMETS issue, I think Jason felt that maybe they could maybe bring that issue back to fore with either ODOT or whoever it is. Mm-hmm. Because the business community felt that if Route 8 had a federal designation, an interstate sign, a red and blue sign, mm-hmm. that it would help them attract more business because now they're off in the
state. Market for access. And
right. And so, you know, it would probably be a three-digit spur route, mm-hmm. of 377 or I think I forget what they mentioned as a number.
Or
I'm sorry?
986 or 4730 or
something. Oh, that usually comes off of whatever the interstate is where it's crossing it. But it was, so 77 something would be a natural. So, I mean, that's one of the things they brought up that, you know, they have heard about and talked about. And now that Route 8 is complete, and I believe when they did that, they built it to interstate standards, which is an issue. I mean, the older part of it may not be. Well, actually, they worked it all. They pretty much redid it all the way down to.
It's basically, I mean, basically, now the end point is the Macedonia is where it ends. I mean, the true highway standard.
Right. But it would only be that section between 271 and to connect. And I think it would also benefit Akron as well because people that are traveling north on 77 or south on 271 that want to go to Akron wouldn't have to go all the way around the 77. That whole Montrose area. So, and I don't know how, the automated mapping systems and like the, whether they would send you that way anyway, or they send you on Route 8 or just stick to interstates or whatever. So, in any case, it's just something that was brought up, and I don't recall anything else. It was it was an early January meeting at 7 o'clock, so it was kind of a tough time. But the reason I think also they presented tonight is, I think the organization wants to take it out on the road to other places. If you know organizations, you're in your own town that you want to do it at a Rotary or any other civic group that you're part of, a business group.
And we will be presenting to the Fairlawn Rotary February 16th. I hope you've scheduled that. So, and I think we also thought, too, we wanted to show it to the CIC just to say, you know, this is kind of one of the things that we've discussed, we tried it out. I think, I know talking to Jason, he was really happy with the feedback. I think it's always interesting, from a planner to get the business perspective and thoughts and to go off that, the Route 8 thing. I mean, I've actually, a couple years ago, Akron was really interested in that redesignation because they want more money, federal money, to help pay for some of the bridges that are going through their area. So I think that is an issue that a lot of the region could get behind if it was orchestrated correctly.
I have a question, Bill Mack. If it were designated, let's say, 877 or whatever, and got federal money, would that then free up state of Ohio money for other state highways in our area, or how would that work if the federal government took over maintenance and repair of that road?
Oh, I don't think they would do that.
Well, what it would do is it would allow that highway to become eligible for some pots of federal money that it currently isn't eligible for. Mm-hmm. So I think you could assume money could be subbed out from, you know, the state fund that might be going towards, you know, certain state bridge program, you know, for a federal bridge program instead. But I think what the intent would be for, I mean, there's the marketing kind of mental side of it, but then there's also, I think, you know, from Akron's point of view, that there was some available federal funding that they could use to help maintain some of, because that, the area around the central interchange is, we all know, is way below acceptable. So
talking about marketing, businesses interested in being able to market that they're on or next to an interstate, that would, going north from the central interchange, that would only be Akron, Chicago Falls, Stowe, maybe Talmadge,
maybe 271, up to
270,
Boston,
through Macedonia. They would be the ones to be interested. Northfield wouldn't be interested, or anybody else. It'd just be the ones that are touching the interstate, the proposed interstate.
It might go a little bit further.
Yeah, I mean, you don't know. Even maybe someone like Kent might even say, you know, maybe KSU wants to say we're, you know, 7 miles from, you know, 377 or something like that. I mean, you know, I think that there are valid points. I'm, you know, I know last time we brought it up with ODOT, they weren't that hot on it a couple of years ago. But it's a new administration, you know, so you never know.
You could get businesses lined up saying we could really use this, and not just a manufacturing or some other factory, but I would say Kent or somebody else that would like to advertise. There's so many miles off of this interstate connector. You might get a good groundswell of people that might push for that.
Suburban Pittsburgh, they just redesignated Pennsylvania State 60 as Spur 476, I believe it's called. 376. Okay.
Yeah, I've noticed they've done a lot with some of the roads in
Pennsylvania. Is that the one that splits the airport?
So yeah, it's
I mean, it goes.
Yeah, it takes you around and through that sprawling area called Green Tree and then downtown Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
Okay. Any other comments on this topic?
Would the state of Ohio have something to lose by redesignating that as an interstate?
You know, that's a good question. I don't know. I think sometimes too, when you, depending on who you talk to, I think it can turn into a bureaucratic nightmare of trying to get it done. I think it's more about just finding someone that has the will to push it. Because I think more like Ohio's perspective, where when we talked to ODOT, it was like, yeah, that'd be nice, but the feds would never go for it. You know, so should we even use the effort? And I could be misspeaking, but that was always my personal impression.
I think you'd have to have some political support for it as well.
Yeah.
I mean, Pennsylvania's traditionally had strong people in transportation, and they can get things done, whereas maybe some other states.
Yeah.
Anyone else? Topic.
Okay, then
so now we move on to decision policy committee agenda items. That's packet attachment 3C in your packet. Which one is that?
We'll skip. What we're going to do is we'll talk. We're actually going to talk about 6A. Is the
you want to go down to 6A?
Yeah, 6A is the one that we have this under selected policy that we wanted to make sure we got public involvement on. And then the others, like everything from 3C below.
Okay. So, it's a little so you want to say this like a few paragraphs?
Yeah. Basically, 6A, and what we've discussed this at the last meeting, this was really kind of pushed by the policy committee. A couple of mayors really felt this was important. And in the past, AMATS and its funding policy, when you apply to AMATS, you have to say, for the 20% local share, you know, I'm going to commit 20% of my local funds. And by that, it's basically meant from the local coffers, you know, you had to show that you could pay the 20%. And what we're doing now in this funding policy change is we're saying we're going to allow you to use other sources to match that federal money. So the big one would be like the Ohio Public Works Commission funds. We're going to let communities, if they say, hey, we can get 20% from the public works, then we can get the 80% from the federal, and there's no money out of our pocket, but we can afford it. And I think it came down to an issue of equity. A lot of community, you know, AMATS area still has some, you know, communities are in good financial shape where they can pay the 20%, but what we were finding was I think some communities were starting to get left behind because, you know, the issue wasn't the $4 million project, it was the, you know, it was that 20% of $4 million and how they could even fund that part of it. So the purpose of this memo is to get that into our funding policy and get it approved by the policy committee. The staff's requesting approval, and I think overall it's thought to be a pretty good way to go, especially with the way local governments have been strapped.
Can you say this is for discussion only?
6A is a resolution.
Right. So we'll be voting on it at some point.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And what we did was we pulled out one. This is the resolution we wanted. You know how we usually do a slate where we'll vote on it on slate? We wanted to make sure that this one got attention just because it's revising the funding policy. It affects our TIP, so we wanted to make sure we got public involvement on it. So I think, you know, if you want to vote on it now or if you want to wait and approve it as part of the larger slate.
Like, right. Here it said it's for discussion only.
Really? On the yellow?
Unless I have enough out of date.
No, you know what? That's incorrect. Because we're asking the policy committee to approve this.
No, Mr. Chairman, I recommend CIC recommend approval of the resolution number 2011-01.
And I second.
Mr. Dietrich?
Who seconded?
Mr. Mackey.
So we have a second. Any further discussion? I just want to point out, you'll note that all the different programs that AMEX administers, it's been, the old portion's been struck out and the new portion's been put in red. And those are all the different programs, resurfacing, transportation enhancement, congestion mitigation. It's basically the same language, all with the 20% changes.
Yeah.
With that, if there are no other questions, we'll go to a vote. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Then do you want to cover the rest of the items as well?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Then we can take the rest as the resolutions as a slate. Okay. We did have at TAC and we had at at Policy Committee, we did have, you'll see item 5C, electric vehicle presentation from the University of Akron. They had a couple of professors come in to explain how they're making an effort to make Akron area, Summit County, kind of they're trying to get support from the state to make it a pilot project for electric substations for cars to plug into using fleets and all that. And they're possibly looking or will ask AMEX for like a resolution of support in the future. And so they wanted to come out and kind of do their show and tell everyone about it. It was really pretty interesting. They talked about the four different automobiles, or the three that are going to be on the market in the next year, including the Volt and the Nissan Leaf, and there's a Mitsubishi one, too, I think, called the Mabe. I don't even remember what it was called. Huh?
Ford's.
Yeah, Ford, and then I guess Toyota's making a RAV4 that's going to be plug-in. And so, you know, they talked about how, you know, they thought this is coming, and, you know, the more likely, if we have these things in place, this infrastructure in place, more likely we're going to see, you know, we could potentially lure businesses here that are interested in these types of markets and get a leg up. So that was the purpose of that. But so they weren't able to come to CIC. But other than that, I think the staff would be asking for the approval of 5A, 5B, and then 6B, 6C, and 6D.
Those resolutions 2011-02, 03, and 04.
Yeah, and then also the 5A and 5B they're drafts.
Yeah.
They're not finals, but want to make sure too that if you want to make a motion on those two, they're not resolutions, but we were looking for motions for approval on those.
What's the sum total of draft on 5A?
We don't have that here.
How many hundreds of millions?
That's a good question. It should be in the packet. Well, maybe there's not a... Actually...
Is this something that comes up every 4 years, or is this rolling?
We approve it every 4 years, but we're constantly making it.
So it is rolling.
Yeah.
It's basically pushing it out every year.
And this is kind of like the first draft of projects. Mm-hmm. A lot of them have already been put on the TIP, but this is when we publish the new document, this is what it will kind of look like.
So when does the other list come out?
the other, the enhancement and the other, is that also, you also come up with a similar statement for those as well?
This, this should also include, this includes CMAQ funded projects and enhancement projects.
Oh, okay.
So they're just kind of hidden within that.
Oh.
Under the, like the fund type, it'll say TEP.
Oh, okay. So look for your favorite project.
Yeah, yeah. And the real purpose for this was to give it to communities to make sure, hey, we're not missing any of your projects. You know, we've got them already. So that's kind of the purpose of this part.
And this isn't anything to do with the score. This is sort of a wish list.
This is what's all these projects that are on the TIP have already been scored, approved.
Oh, okay.
This is just because we publish a new report, we have to like submit like a snapshot photo of it.
So, to summarize again, we're looking for a resolution, a motion to approve Attachments 5A and 5B, the two draft documents.
Yes.
And Attachments 6B, C, and D, which are resolutions 02, 03, and 04.
I think we ought to treat those two separate, because there's resolutions.
And motions.
So you'd like to make a motion to that. Let's look for a motion to do... for approval of resolutions 2001, 02, 03, and 04. Anyone have a motion?
Audrey.
Second, please.
Second, Bill Mackey.
Okay. Any further discussion?
Yeah. I hope that when you present this to the policy committee, you'll have map 1, 2 attached.
Yes, that was this.
This is the resolutions.
Not sure which one they're talking about.
Which one are you talking about?
Attachment 6B, I think is what he's talking
about. Yeah, that's
okay. Okay, so he's talking about this.
Earlier, you did the highlight.
Yeah.
And the map isn't there on his?
No, it is.
You have it. Bill, did you find this helpful?
I found that very helpful.
Okay.
Figure out where the heck these jobs are going to put on.
Okay.
Well,
we'll continue to try to do that.
That's a very helpful map. Drive out there and look at it.
Cool. So we're still in the discussion. Any other discussion?
I do have a question for Curtis. Will we be voting on this electrical vehicle initiative?
Oh, no, we won't.
Oh,
potentially?
So The University of Akron put this on. Is this for the University of Akron only just for their campus, or is it something that they want to do on a regional level?
When they approached us about it, it's definitely a regional level, and I think what they're really trying to say is it's for Cleveland, Canton, Youngstown, Akron, and they're saying, they're making this push. We're in the middle, you know, we're the closest distance between all these cities, you know, so it's a regional effort, but they're saying we want it to start here and then to branch out to those.
I think that would be wonderful for the area, especially for businesses or people looking to move to the area. It appears as if we would be a progressive type of a community.
Right. And that was one of their arguments. And I think the other thing is that you take into account is that most of those vehicles are coming in and averaging between 40 to 80 miles per power charge. Mm-hmm. And so what they were saying is, look, if you're in Akron, you can get from Akron to Youngstown, you can get from Akron to Cleveland and back. Versus if you go to Cleveland, then it takes you forever to get here. And so that was their kind of work position, perfectly in Northeast Ohio. Because I think there are some agencies in Cleveland that are also kind of angling for, they'd like it to start in Cleveland and then branch out. Obviously, I mean, most communities would.
Mr. Chairman, point of order, we have a motion on the floor.
Yes? Okay. Well, I didn't. We had discussion. We're still at that. We haven't voted on that.
Right, we haven't voted.
So, but that was the sort of a sideline to this. All right. So, any other further discussion? And we'll then
All in favor of the resolution?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Then we'll look for a resolution or motion for attachments 5A and 5B, the draft transportation improvement program and the transportation planning work program.
Thought we just moved that as 5A and 5B.
Actually, he did resolutions 2, 3, and 4.
We just did 2, 3, and 4. Now we're doing the others. Okay.
Mac, you should.
All right. Any discussion on these two items? Then we'll go through a vote. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. And we are aware.
We are now at number 7, other business community outreach update. That's all you, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Well, let's, since we have visitors that were good enough to come out tonight, anything that from the floor that anyone would like to bring up?
I would like to go back to the discussion on electric vehicles. From what I've seen, each manufacturer, of course, is coming up with their own charging station. I would think that would be difficult to set up a community charging area, be it at a business. I mean, if a business does it for its fleet, it's one thing. Mm-hmm. If schools do it for school buses, they can do their own thing. But for somebody to drive down here from Cleveland with a Nissan Leaf and look around for a plug-in that fits a Nissan Leaf, they're going to have to, either the manufacturer, car manufacturer is going to have a standard plug when you're traveling. All right. I don't see it working with all these different plug-ins that the car manufacturer
can make. They carry their plug with them.
It's an invisible one that matches the plug.
It's an invisible cord.
Yeah.
Well, the one thing I can say is when the presentation they gave to us, their intent was first to start with a fleet, you know, like a government, to start with a government fleet and start there and then use those as a test pilot, you know, like they were talking around roughly like 50 vehicles or something like that on this whole power grid. Because on the other side of this is too, like First Energy is involved in this with the university because they're concerned from a power grid standpoint. If we all changed out our cars for plug-ins, we would crash the grid.
So I mean, Energy there?
Yeah, they weren't at this meeting, but they have been involved in the discussions, and they're a partner in it. That's another part of Akron trying to sell it is that First Energy is their partner in this, and so it's kind of one of those private public efforts, which I think is positive.
Is Myers there? Because Myers is right in. Akron has been trying to develop some kind of a car.
No, they were not there. Now, they might be involved in the effort, but the other interesting thing is just when they start talking about, 120 volts versus 240, and you start talking about the speed, and I guess there's some interest to even do like a 480, which could charge some of these things in like a half hour. Yeah, but I just keep wondering, like, if the plug's wet and you're in the middle of the rain and you're going to plug it in, what's going to happen to you? But I think what we've seen is there's a lot of optimism on this front. I think a lot of thought that this could be maybe the springboard to, Mike's always been pretty interested in like the algae discussion, or this might be the first step to. Because the big criticism from an environmental standpoint is that with electricity, you're still burning coal, and you're going to burn more coal in order to, instead of, you're substituting gas for coal, essentially. But I think from a consumer standpoint, you're talking about potentially cheaper, a cheaper product or a cheaper usage. So I think it'll be interesting to see where it goes in the next couple of months and years.
So we'll get an update on that in the future.
Yeah, I mean, if they request a resolution from us, that'll definitely be on and will be a discussion topic at the next CIC.
I'd like to see the speakers at that next.
We could try to invite Mr. Ying Lee. He was pretty interesting and had a very good presentation. We can attempt to invite him and see if he's interested in coming out to speak to the CIC.
Is there any way to tape those and put them on your website?
He said he was going to send us the presentation, but the presentation without someone leading you through it, I think in the case of that presentation would only you'd get some interesting tidbits, but I think it's it was a lot more interesting to hear him kind of talk about what.
That's what I'm saying is when he comes out to one of those meetings, is there a way you can actually put it on?
Yeah, I mean, if he comes to CIC, we could we'll have it recorded. We could actually turn it into a little podcast.
Well, that's what I meant for other public, whatever else to kind of make increase your offerings.
Yeah, we could definitely try that
because not everyone else can make it out to evening meetings.
Right.
In the interest of moving meetings around, perhaps we could hold a meeting at the University of Akron where this presentation is made and invite some of the other students. I, being a part-time post-bac student, would love not having to drive all the way up to Silver Lake in the snow.
You have covered parking.
Yeah, we could use one of the parking.
Hey, it's close to our office.
Right,
June, what would be, there's March, and then what's the next meeting?
May.
May? Hopefully that's not going to be an issue in May.
Yeah, I
Well, I mean, like I said, we're going to try, I mean, the one, and I hope we're not getting too far, but the one idea where we've always kept it at Silver Lake was the idea, at least you guys don't have to work, okay, where is the meeting this time? You know, it's very consistent, because we have had occasions when we move the meeting that some poor soul drives out to Silver Lake, and then only to find there's no meeting. So I think, you know, we're going to try and see if we can have some success with it. I think, you know, we're definitely open to it as staff. I mean, it's kind of fun to go to different places and stuff. And as long as we still get a critical mass. I mean, if we go different places and we get two people, we might say, maybe we should go back to Silver Lake. But
Well, don't give up on the first try.
No, we won't give up on the first try, but that'll be a consideration, so...
Anything else from the floor?
I have a couple of items here in relation to the railroad and transportation. I think it's been discussed here in the past, not terribly recently so, but I believe it was December 28th or thereabouts, Twinsburg Road in Macedonia has become a whistle-free location. Yeah. Yeah. And let me tell you, that really freaks out an engineer when the UPS truck's coming right up to the crossing and you reach for the horn and go, whoa, wait a minute. Not supposed to do that because that just happened to me today. 2 days ago was the first time I've ever operated a train through a whistle-free zone. I've ridden through whistle-free zones and seen them in Chicago and Indiana. This is the first time I've had an experience.
How do you know it's whistle? Some big sign.
Well, they haven't changed the sign yet, so I hope none of my coworkers get in trouble. What we use out in Mishawaka, Indiana, is a WR, meaning whistle restriction. If we're doing any track work, we're still going to blow the horn. If we think somebody's being stupid, we're still going to blow the horn. Or still ring the bell through, although I think some of the engineers are not ringing the bell, but it's my understanding we should be ringing the bell. So the people in that area of urban sprawl there are certainly enjoying the horns not blowing. Maybe occasionally they do still blow. Next week is the Transportation Research Board in Washington, D.C. Is anyone from staff attending?
Staff is not attending this year.
Not attending?
No.
Okay, I will try to attend, assuming the railroad lets me have off. I'll be making a short presentation on one of my favorite subjects, the use of abandoned railroads as transportation corridors of the future. And looking at our Cleveland, Akron, and Columbus line through town here, I certainly still believe in that. Also, coming up next month, today actually being the 30th anniversary of President Reagan taking office, I found that was interesting, his inauguration 30 years ago. Wow. But next month, we had a visitor 150 years ago. This will be the 150th anniversary of Lincoln's visit to our communities of Ravenna and Hudson. The entire train was, three or four cars. Left Akron and came up to Hudson. President-elect Lincoln was so hoarse by the time he got there, he basically come out because there was so much noise, bowed to the crowd, and a very short speech, as you can hear by the sound of my voice, being something about being hoarse. I therefore cannot give speech. And everybody cheers, gets back on the train, and continues on to Cleveland. If anyone's interested in history, I do have a document. You can see me afterwards. Well, I was unable to coordinate an actual inaugural train to try to recreate this event, and the planned activity in Hudson was apparently cut due to budget constraints and such. The Illinois Historic Preservation Agency, on the day of the train's departure from Springfield, Illinois, is conducting a speech along. I don't know what they exactly call it, but it's your chance to get in the Guinness Book of World Records. We're going to have the largest
number of people ever citing President-elect Lincoln's departure address, at least for a duration of 5 minutes, and enough people are signed up, will be in the Guinness Book of World Records. That's all I have. I'll have a more thorough report next month, or in 2 months, in March, regarding TRD, and I'll probably bring all kinds of stuff for show and tell. Thank you for the time.
Thank you. Anything else from the floor?
Just one item. We've been throwing around Walmart and Lowe's all the folder all on retail type development. It strikes me as kind of strange that we have not changed our definition of economic development. We're in a stagnant population. We're in a no-growth area. And it seems to me that the definition of economic development should be what can we do to bring businesses in here that will attract additional population, not use the population that's already here. I don't know how you do that, but when you think of all the border disputes and all this, we're going to put this over here, we're vacating something here, that really is not economic development. It creates some temporary jobs. It all does steal jobs from one place to the other. And economic development should be, how do we grow the population in Northeast Ohio? I don't know whether AMAS could do anything to stimulate that thought process or not.
It's a great point, and I think it's completely true. You know, I think it's definitely though. You know, if Honda wanted to move in here, I think nobody would give a crap what the zoning was. We would just find a piece of land for them and let them build it. I think that is one of the troubling things that we try to get communities to understand too. Is that even if you do bring in a new business, like say a Walmart, from a local community tax base standpoint, it can, it's been shown to do more harm than good from the, from what the community has to do to make sure that it's safe, plowed, traffic, all those things. It ends up being a net loss instead of a net gain.
Now, back your thing up a couple of slides slowly, so I can keep going. Go forward one. There was one bullet you had in there that kind of said it.
Back here?
No, it would be back further, I think.
Like towards the end?
No, don't worry about it. There was one bullet in there that kind of said what I'm trying to say. Mm-hmm. How do you define that? And, I look at things like Seasons Road, the development there. We're going to have a hospital moving from Dog Falls to Seasons Road here. Why are we doing it? Because if we don't, Cleveland are going to build a hospital there. Now that's no concern. But those are the type of things that I think somehow subtly we have to change the concept.
Yeah.
And I don't know how you do it.
Yeah.
Wouldn't AMETs have to have a policy in place, like the Walmart issue or the hospital issue, that if they feel that it's something we're just to move and it's not actual economic development, that you're not going to fund it? You wouldn't pay your 80% of the community would have to pay it all.
Right. We've even thrown around ideas like that in a worst-case scenario, And I think the one thing that we keep coming back to, though, from a public agency is, in the end, we're here for the public good. So you're not going to, over time, if that, say, they do make the move and we say we aren't going to fund it, and then 10 years from now there's accidents and, crashes and congestion, the public's not going to care. Like 10 years ago you said you weren't going to fund it. They're just going to want it to be fixed. So, we've kind of thought that, the threat of that might be stronger than actually doing it. Because I think once it's built, we kind of do have the obligation to make sure people don't get hurt or, can travel through a location safely, which is some of the challenges we've discussed.
Yeah.
but have you discussed, has AMS discussed creating some kind of a policy or just some hybrid of a policy?
Yeah, and I mean, we've discussed it, and I can only say that it's gone about that far. Okay. I don't think our policy committee is too keen on doing anything like that. I think from a staff perspective, we try to push the envelope, especially with the education side of things, and hope that it sinks in. But policies like that are kind of tough sometimes to get approved.
You really don't control.
Right.
When you come right down to
it. Right.
Period, you don't really have control.
Well, in the Walmart case, eventually somebody's going to get sued. You know what I mean? Like, no matter what happens in that case, eventually the loser's going to sue the winner. And it's going to be, you know, probably millions of dollars and time invested. And eventually something will get built there that some people like and some people don't. And that's not to be defeatist about it, but it's almost like, in the end, like, when there's two property owners, eventually it's going to come down to that, you know, whether an AMATS policy is there or not.
Right.
Which just makes it more challenging. Okay.
So the community outreach, as far as business, will be continued that in February 16th. That's the Rotary at what time?
7:30. I'll get you that information.
7:30 a.m. Okay. So you want to... If you'd like more information, you can attend that. And one more item before we conclude tonight. AMATS and the Citizens Involvement Committee would like to recognize Audrey Kessler for her service. Audrey? For 20 years before I was here, for chairman 2008 to 2010. Very much for your service for coming to the meetings. And also, I'd like to also take the opportunity to thank Michael Ondecker, who isn't here tonight. He's been involved for several years as well. Takes a lot to come out to these things regularly and run the meetings. It's not that easy, as I found out tonight. So we appreciate everyone's and your participation as well, the public. So with that, is there a motion to adjourn tonight?
So moved.
Those two? Excellent. All right. And all in favor?
Aye.
Thank you.
Yeah, we've got one of those plaques for Mike, and after about 3 years, we just kept throwing them away.
Oh, really?
He was reelected, and then they were like, well.
Did you?